Blog Talk Radio.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds. Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is your host, Jess Root, for Revenge of the Birds Radio on the line. We're here on a Tuesday night, the night after the first round of required roster cuts have occurred, and the Arizona Cardinals, along with every other NFL team, now has trimmed their rosters down to 75 players. We're also just a few days off of past the third preseason game, in which the Arizona Cardinals laid their first preseason egg, and their first egg of the season, getting beaten and a bit embarrassed 24-7 on Saturday night. I have one of our co-hosts. I've got Ben on the line. Say hello to all the Cardinals fans, Ben.
Hey, everybody. I'm here and ready to talk about how much I don't want to talk about the game, so this will be good.
And we also have Seth Cox on the line with us as well. Good evening, Seth. How are you?
Good, Jess. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great. Well, before we get started, we've got this quick rundown of that awful game on Saturday. If you watched it, it was demoralizing after the wins that we saw the Cardinals have against Green Bay, where they pretty much were in control start to finish. Then the Dallas game, where they struggled in the red zone, but defensively took care of business and looked still quite good, forcing all sorts of turnovers. Then the wheels kind of fell off a bit. Mental mistakes, all sorts of issues. We had sacks given up. We had our first pressures from the first team offensive line happened. Levi Brown looking like Levi Brown looked when we didn't like Levi Brown. You had Rashad Johnson turning a goal line turnover into a San Diego touchdown with an inexplicable lateral to Sam Acho, as if Sam Acho was going to return that for a touchdown. We also saw San Diego, led by Ken Wisenhunt's offense, march down the field methodically to score points against the highly praised Arizona Cardinals defense, which really had looked very good in the preseason thus far. But that's all in the past, aside from kind of the aftermath of that, in which the biggest issue we had was the injury bug, where we lost Jonathan Cooper, the rookie, first-round pick, seventh pick overall, left guard. He broke his leg, broke his fibula. He's going to be out 10 to 12 weeks, perhaps making it back for the last few games of the regular season. Also, Rashard Mendenhall sprained his knee. We have an assortment of other minor injuries. Rob Housler with a high ankle sprain. DC Jefferson with a knee injury, not too bad. We have DC Ellington, he's with the Matt Shaughnessy. Rashad Johnson came away a little dinged up. But pretty much there were several players that left the game with injuries, Dan Williams as well, the biggest one being Cooper. Now, before we move on to the topics, in the experience, I was there at the game watching, doing my thing in the press box, and it felt like last season. It just felt like everything that went wrong could go wrong, with the exception. There was one positive I came out of that, aside from the running game, because the running game from the first teamers was great between Rashard Mendenhall and Alphonso Smith, who looked like a viable NFL running back, not just as the special teams, the fourth guy that comes in. He looked good. But what I liked, and kind of the purpose why they had the starters go in the second half, the whole idea behind Bruce Arians sending in his starters in the second half was to go into halftime, make adjustments, come out in the second half, and then see what happens and play this the one series. Unfortunately, that was the series in which Cooper got hurt. but they regrouped. They were having a decent drive, and they recouped after that. Three plays later, they found the end zone on a beautiful throw and a beautiful catch by Michael Floyd in the end zone. And so we not only saw a turnaround, and after that it sort of went awry after that. It wasn't great when you've got the bench players in for both teams. But I really like the fact that after that adversity of that injury to Cooper and the fact that they looked so bad right there at the end of the first half, that the offense, the first team, did come out and do exactly what we wanted them to do, to come out, make adjustments, march down the field, and score, which they did. You guys, let's take you, Seth. What were your initial impressions after the game, and then after the fact, what did you take away from that?
Well, the game itself was just, it was the worst thing that could have happened for the Cardinals that day. It was a combination of poor execution, poor play, really missing on a lot of opportunities, not looking like they were in sync. It looked more like the first preseason game than the third. And then you just factor in the injuries, not even looking at Cooper's, but just the injuries to other players, Dan Williams, Rob Housler, like you said. It was probably the worst a preseason game could have gone without multiple major injuries being involved, like there was back in Minnesota, what was that, 10 years ago, in the Dome. But as far as the game goes, the offense looked out of sync for much of the game. Rashard Mendenhall in the running game and Alphonso Smith, like you touched on, they looked solid. There was a lot of good movement by the offensive line in the run game. And, you know, a lot of that can be attributed to what Jonathan Cooper was doing in that game, his ability to pull and move, get to the second level and open up blocks. Darren Urban even tweeted out during the game that Alphonso Smith probably would have ran for a touchdown if Eric Winston would have gotten to the second level and sealed off his man, something that we've talked about before in the zone scheme. But the thing that was most concerning to me, and something that you and I talked about on the preseason podcast, was the fact that the quarterback and the wide receivers are still so out of sync. You know, that was something that I knew that it was going to take some time, and they came out in game one and even in game two at parts and looked really, really good. But then in game three, it just seemed like they took a couple steps backwards. And I think outside of the injury to Cooper, that was the biggest concern for me, is that they still seem really like they're not on the same page at all in Arian's passing game.
Ben, what was your take? What was your impression during the game and a few days after the fact? What are we looking at?
Well, you called it demoralizing, and that was pretty much exactly what it was. Just watching the game, watching Cooper go down, is kind of like watching someone get shot. I mean, you see it happening, you know it's coming, there's nothing you can do to stop it, and then boom, and he's down, and it just feels awful. And I didn't even know. I was Googling in, I think, the third or fourth quarter, trying to figure out, you know, if what exactly had happened to him, if he was going to be back, if he was done for the season, because it just looked so bad. And that was how I found out that Dan Williams had gone out, and I think Mendenhall or somebody else too. I didn't even realize during the game that it happened to them. So I mean, just watching it was really tough. And then a couple days later, you find out that the injuries aren't so bad. Coop, we'll get him back eventually. So that feels pretty good. As Seth was saying, the first team offense, it could have been better. I think it's basically functioning, but they're still getting some things ironed out. And, you know, when you kind of step back and you have a couple of days away to look at it, it's coming along. You know, if you're gonna see errors like this, all the mental errors, you want it to happen in the preseason. So it's good that they're getting this out of the way. You know, I think that they're kind of finding out the things that they have to work on now. I think they've done a pretty good job adjusting the defense, especially. I've mainly been, when I go back and rewatch the games, I've mainly been focusing on the defensive line and the outside linebackers and seeing how they're playing. And they've moved some guys around a little bit. They had Shaughnessy standing up as an outside linebacker in the first game against Green Bay, and he looked kind of slow. He didn't really have much of an impact, and since then he's mostly been lining up with his hand in the dirt. So they're doing a pretty good job from that perspective. So I'm still hopeful. Moving forward, I'm glad we're going to get most of our guys back, at least it sounds like, in time for the regular season.
I'll kind of piggyback off that. I was there at the preseason game last year when Levi Brown went down, and naturally what happens is that they say that there's an injury, and they said he's not going to return. That's all they give. That's the only information that you get in the press box. You don't know exactly what's going on. But you can tell on the field when something is pretty serious. Winston, when he looked back at him, you could see him, I believe you could see him on the replay, saying a not-so-very-nice word, knowing what happened. When the players hover around a player like that and he gets carted off the field, you know it's something serious. Last year when Levi tore his triceps, there was a quote that Larry Fitzgerald that I caught when he was talking to the press after the game, and he said something about the injury, how he knew it was serious. He basically told everyone he knew that he was done for the year before any of that information came out. Players know when it's serious. And the mood after the game, the other players was like, oh, man, this is tough for him. It's really tough on the kid. He was doing so well. But we now know that he can come back. Whether he should be available for the last few games as early as with six games left, depending on how his recovery goes and how things go after that. The decision was made, Darren College shifting from right guard to left guard, where he played his entire career before this year, and then promoting Paul Fanica, who is, by the way, has been a camp surprise. He'd been used pretty much – he was listed as a guard and a tackle when he was brought in, but he'd almost been used exclusively at tackle. They moved him inside, and he's excelled. He's excelled quite a bit, and there was even a little bit of talk there when Darren College was out with his leg fracture that Fanica – perhaps could overtake him. That didn't happen. But rather than what they did in the game, they brought in Shiloh Rashal to come in at left guard, as he's the primary backup at left guard, and he was in there for those three plays, and that was it. So instead of promoting Rashal to the starting line, move College over, bring up Fanica. Seth, what's your take on that? How you like that decision, and what do you think Cooper's impact is going to be, if he's going to be able to be effective, if he's going to get any games in, or is he going to be pushed enough that he's going to be asked to play perhaps before he might be ready?
Well, one of the things that benefits me outside of writing for Revenge of the Birds and some other sites is that I actually work at a hospital, and I talked to two different doctors the last 2 days just that are football fans and just got their information on what they thought of the Cooper injury. And they both told me the same thing. It's a 10 to 12 week injury. The 12 weeks is if he would have had any plates or rods put in. Coach Arians came out and said that he didn't have any rods put in. So that takes 2 weeks off the process basically. And they said it's 10 weeks, but they gave that with a caveat. It kind of to want to see Cooper this year. And the caveat is, they said in about 30 to 40% of their patients that you'll see lingering effects for up to 2 years of the ankle injury, just because of where the fracture is in the fibula, some tendon and ligament issues that go along with that, and that it can really hinder somebody's movement ability. Obviously, you'd hope that no matter where the Cardinals are in the race, that they wouldn't jeopardize the long-term future of Jonathan Cooper to bring him back for a short amount of games. But that kind of had me thinking that no matter what happens this year, give this guy a medical red shirt, so to speak. Let him heal up, get completely healthy, give him a year off, basically, and then bring him back and ready to go in 2014. I know that's not what anybody wants to hear. I know everybody wants, you know, even Arian said they don't want to have two rookie seasons for Cooper. But the reality is you don't want to push somebody back or make somebody feel like they need to come back before they're physically or, you know, ready. And just in athletes in general, a lot of them will come back before they're ready to, because they feel that pressure and they feel that burden that they need to do what's best for the team, you know, a lot of times putting the team before themselves. So, you know, all that being said, obviously it just depends on Cooper's rehabilitation and everything, but I'd really like to see him just take the entire year, because the thought process is, if you bring him back, you're in the playoff hunt most likely, and if you're in the playoff hunt, that means your offensive line, the move of College to left guard, the move of Fanica to right guard, has worked out for the most part, and at that point, why mess with something that's working? I understand the fans wanting to see him. I want to see him play, but I want him to be completely healed. I want him to be ready to go. As far as the movement on the line, that was what I expected. I kind of said that I expected them to move College back to left guard and put Fanica in at right guard. It just made the most sense. You look at what College's history is. He's not, you know, he hasn't actually, you know, blown anybody away with his play in Arizona over the last 2 years. But he's consistently solid, and he's a guy that you can count on. Fanica is playing a new position, as you said, Jess, and the question with Fanica is going to be, can he hold up at the point of attack versus speed? That's something that killed him on the outside. You can kind of hide him on the inside in that case. But just the way the NFL is going now with those quick interior linemen, it's a big question mark, especially with a guy like Palmer, where he's very adept at stepping up into the pocket, stepping out of pressure. But, you know, if he's getting pressure from inside, from the left tackle spot, that could spell trouble.
Interesting fact we just got, thanks to Sean Church, one of our staff writers as well. He just tweeted both you and me. He tweeted to you and me, Seth, that so far this preseason, according to Pro Football Focus, Darren College is the fifth highest rated guard this preseason. That's from the right side. Some might argue, all right, he's doing well on the right side. Why move him back? Interesting thing, if I recall back to the offseason when College was moved over there and we were talking to him about the move, he had to focus on some technical things because he had to do things pretty much backwards, the opposite he was used to doing. And it allowed him as a veteran to go in and focus on that technique as opposed to something he's always done. Sean seems to think College will step right into left guard and it'll be like riding a bike. I tend to agree with him. That's going to be, and having played the right side, I think will actually benefit him. Ben, what do you think? What do you think of the position change or the position shift? Would you have gone a different direction? Would you have left College on the right side? Since assuming that Cooper does come back that season, then you're going to see College shifted back over to the right side, moving him again.
Well, as far as College playing better, I think it probably is helping him a lot that he's not next to D'Anthony Batiste anymore. As far as the shift that they made on the line, it makes sense. College pretty much spent his entire career playing left guard. Fanica, like you said, was having a good camp. He was pushing to start anyway. So short term, I think those guys will be able to cover it. You know, it's going to be a step down from Cooper, obviously, but I think we'll be okay. And I think if you look at the depth, Sheila Rochal, Watford, and Kelemete, at least one or two of those guys should be able to work as backups. It's good news for Kelemete, I guess, because it gives him a chance to make the team now, but we'll see what happens with that. When you look at Cooper, I think because he's so good, because he could be such an impact player for the Cardinals, I think you have to put him on the recallable injured reserve list, the one where they can come back later in the season?
Yeah, this, the name... injured reserve designated for return.
Right. Yeah. I think you have to put him on that just because he can be so good for us. Obviously, you don't want to hurry him back, and you know if he's not ready to play, then he's not ready to play, and you kind of wasted that spot on him for nothing. But I think it's worth the investment just because of the kind of player that he can be.
Now, my take is medical red shirt, maybe, maybe not. I think. You have to push him a little bit. I hope to see him this season. I really do. If anything else, that way he doesn't lose completely that first year. And in part as well, late in the season, those lingering, those soreness issues he's going to have with the ankle and the leg, the tendons in there, playing in an abbreviated season will actually, I think, help alleviate some of those issues. As you see some players coming back from injury, I'll take the example of Greg Toler. Greg Toler's issues last season were not because of durability issues that he could, about being injury prone. Those hamstring injuries that he was suffering in the soreness of the knee was about recovering from his ACL tear, and it was his body getting used to that, and that he was using, and that it was lingered throughout the last season. Cooper comes back. I'm gonna say that's gonna be a good thing. He comes back. Yeah, he's not gonna be as good or as effective perhaps as he would be if he medically redshirted, but you get him out there on the football field, you're gonna let those soreness issues, some of those issues pop up a little bit now, but with a shortened season, he's gonna have that deal with that in the offseason, be a stronger player for year number two. You're listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess Root. We've got Seth and Ben on the line. If you want to join us in the conversation, give us your take on the preseason game on Jonathan Cooper. We'll be talking about Ryan Williams here in a minute and roster cuts in general. You can give us a call at 646-478-3787. Or if you are not a phone available, you can tweet me at Senor Jess Root or at Revenge of Birds. And you can get your take on the air as well. Moving on from the Cooper injury, we had roster cuts. There was really no surprise. The 75 players, the first round of cuts typically are fringe players. They're the back end of the roster that no one thought was going to make the roster. Probably the biggest surprise would be just 4 days after signing Dan Carpenter to compete with Jay Feely for the kicking job, Carpenter is sent packing. He's sent signed with the Jets, and they cut a whole bunch of other players, 11 in total, like 12 total, and they signed another tight end today. They signed a tight end so that they can have some more depth if they do have the injury issues. Jeff King still has some soreness in his knee. Rob Hauser with a high ankle sprain. And then a gaggle of tight ends who really haven't done much in the preseason. Any surprises from either of you, particularly on the Carpenter issue or the fact that they picked up this new tight end? What's his name? Forgot the name. Quinn. This pick up Richard Quinn, previously of the Bengals, actually spent almost all last season inactive. Anything you guys would surprise either of you? What about you, Ben? Were you surprised about the Carpenter cut or any of the other guys that were let go?
Not really too much, no. I mean, I never really thought Carpenter was anything special anyway. I don't want to talk about kickers too long, but he was the kind of guy that, like, he would line up and he'd miss a 20-yard field goal, and then they'd ice him, and he'd make the next one. And on the stats, he looks fine, but you know in the back of your mind that, you know, you originally missed that chip shot, so it's no big deal to me. I mean, they wasted $100K, which for a football club isn't anything too significant, I don't think.
Anything from you, Seth? Any thoughts?
I was a little surprised by the Carpenter signing to begin with and then the immediate removal. I know Mike Jarecki had talked a lot about they had their eyes on two other kickers that are still out there that they haven't signed yet, so apparently they either didn't get cut yet or you know, they're just kind of biding their time. So apparently it's not Kickalicious because he got released today, it looked like, by the Lions. But the as far as the tight end acquisition goes, that's expected. The tight ends, I mean, and we can get into this later, but the tight ends have been abysmal thus far this preseason. Starting from the top of the Rob Hauser all the way down to DC Jefferson and Corey Sperry. I mean, the whole lot has been nothing, you know, nothing to write home about. Jim Trey's shown flashes, but other than that, it's been a really bad preseason for the tight end position in general. So I wasn't surprised they brought in somebody new just to see what he could do and see if maybe he could make an impact as opposed to what, you know, has been occurring.
Well, my preseason pick that we were on the show before, my preseason pick of who I thought would be the surprise cut actually makes me kind of look silly now. I believed Jeff King would be the guy that would get left to the side, being the veteran, the slightly more expensive player, because we would get guys like Jim Dre or DC Jefferson saying, oh, okay, we can do that. That hasn't happened. Chep Kingsgott is a lock for the roster. I've given pretty much, because Jim Dre hasn't done anything special. I think he's done the best. He's done the best so far, but nothing special. Corey Sperry last week, it was a nightmare. Three penalties and a dropped pass. That's not what you want to do after you've been injured. DC Jefferson, he made a Larry Fitzgerald-style catch on one thing, and then the very next time he was thrown the ball, it hit him in the numbers and bounced off and got picked off. That's kind of been Jefferson's camp so far. I haven't really seen anything from Alex Gottlieb, but yeah, the tight end position, as important as it's going to be in the offense, has really been abysmal. Let's not talk about that. Let's go to kind of the hot button issue of everything right now. We've got someone along the line, so let's see. But before we move on, hello, this is Jess from Revenge of the Birds. Who have I got on the line?
My name is Ryan. Am I on? Is this?
You are on live, Ryan. What would you like
to
tell us?
How's it going, Jess?
It's doing great.
I just kind of wanted to give my thoughts on the preseason. I think overall, I was very pleased with the first two games, especially with the pass protection, being able to give Carson Palmer a pretty good pocket. Obviously, I think the third game, I kind of wanted to ask if I'm reading into too much of the third game, but to me, it was just a disaster. I think on all fronts, with the exception of the running game, I was pleased with how we were able to run the ball. Very impressed with what Rashard Mendenhall was able to do. But in terms of just a lot of mistakes, a lot of penalties, I don't think Levi Brown has had a very good preseason at all. Obviously, losing Jonathan Cooper, having some other guys banged up, and just a lot of mental errors. It seemed like to me I was watching a game from last year, personally, in terms of the mistakes and the penalties. And, you know, a guy I really haven't been impressed with is Rob Housler. I've been hearing people for the past 3 years talk about how really good Rob Housler is going to be and how much of a weapon he can be. And, yeah, he has shown some flashes, but, like, you know, against the Cowboys he had a big drop on a touchdown pass in which he was pretty open. I've seen that play happen at least half a dozen times in his first couple seasons.
Thanks for talking to us. I'm going to point out something about Levi Brown. Up until the San Diego game, he had a penalty in each of his first games. But if you look at the numbers of when he came to his assignments, he did not give up a single pressure during those first two games. And obviously, that kind of changed in this last one. So I'm going to defend Levi a little bit. Levi is who
okay.
we thought he
That's
was.
Fair.
He did fine the first two games. He did have the penalties. But you also have to look on the other side. Who was he facing? He was facing a Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, Dwight Freeney. That guy makes every left tackle look silly. And there was the last sack, Levi ended up on his butt. That was the most embarrassing of them all. He literally ended up on his butt on the play. But yeah, the Levi, he had a bad game, but he's had a good camp. And he's had a decent preseason. So I'm going to – Housler, yes. I think we're all – Housler's that. He's going to be the breakout player. He drops passes, and he gets hurt. We're going to have to wait and see. Now, last year, he did well. I mean, he did okay. I believe he led the division in tight ends and in receptions. And he had terrible
all right,
quarterback play.
If I could just ask one more question, and then I just
sure.
kind of want to know, how much do you guys really read into that third preseason game? I know a lot of people think it's the game that will kind of give you the best idea of where your team is at for the regular season, just because of how late the starters are going to play. So do you kind of see it maybe the third preseason game as, like, you know, more of a fluke in terms of what we saw, or, you know, are Cardinal fans in for sort of a long season? So I just want to kind of get you guys' thoughts on that. Really like the show, and I'll keep listening, man. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for calling in. Hey, Seth or Ben, you guys want to take that last question?
As far as the third preseason game goes, it's you know, a dress rehearsal in name and action to me. You want to see good performance, obviously, but you also want to see the guys figuring things out, getting used to coming out of halftime and being ready to play. And as Jess pointed out, they were very successful in that outside of the Cooper injury. And the other thing that you can read into a lot with this team. There's a lot of knowns to this team that get kind of overlooked. One is that this offensive line. Levi Brown isn't a great pass blocker. He showed that. You know, like Jess said, he hasn't given up a ton of sacks or hits yet, but he's had a penalty in every game, and that's something that is caused by his, I don't want to say fear, but I guess it's fear of when it's a pass situation and he has to pass protect. But you look at what he did in the run game, and he and Jonathan Cooper were downright nasty in the run game on last Saturday, and that's what you expect from Levi. I kind of tweeted this out as a joke the other day, but the Cardinals have three right tackles right now on their roster in Eric Winston, Bobby Massey, and Levi Brown. They don't have a left tackle, unfortunately. And you know, you can read a lot into a lot of different things, but as far as the game goes, it's still just preseason, and it's still, you know, trying to find the timing of the routes. It's still trying to figure out where guys are going to be. There's a lot of intricacies to the Arians passing game that it's just far too long of a conversation to have here right now. But I'll just say this. There's a lot of side adjustments that have to be made during the routes being run, and you can see that the wide receivers and Carson Palmer are not making those adjustments together. Palmer's seeing one thing and throwing the ball to where he wants the receiver to be. The receiver's running the route or seeing another thing and not finish following through on the route or whatever. And it's more been with Michael Floyd and Andre Roberts. You know, Larry's had a couple. I didn't think he had any in the San Diego game, but I think he had one or two in the Dallas game. But that's going to be a very difficult thing to get used to seeing early in the year, because you're going to see a lot of great down the field throws, and you're going to see a lot of passes that make you go, what are they doing out there? So it's still preseason, and they're still trying to work out the kinks. So I don't think it's time to push the panic button just yet.
Ben, your take?
Yeah, Seth has kind of been the front runner of the idea. I think that, you know, it's new coaches, new schemes, a lot of new starters, so growing pains are to be expected. I know my expectations weren't quite low enough for this last game, but they're getting there now. I think they're about where they need to be. Like you said, it's still preseason. They still have a little bit of time. Everybody's still learning. I think that's pretty much what we've seen, and I think hopefully they'll continue to assimilate in the new offense and just, you know, get better.
And I'll take away from this preseason game and how it looked. Yes, it's kind of their dress rehearsal, but based on what we see, that's the worst we're going to see, I imagine. I really can't imagine going in any, knock on wood, of course, I can't see anything going worse as a starting unit, both in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. I think that's the worst it's going to be. And even then, even with that, if it weren't for the just boneheaded decision of Rashad Johnson trying to toss the ball to Sam Acho. I get it if it's Patrick Peterson or Tyrann Mathieu there. Sam Acho isn't going to go anywhere with that ball. But if it weren't for that play, it's a 7-0 game. And you can live with that. And so that's as bad as it gets. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. You're listening to Jess. I'm your host. We also have Seth and Ben on the line. If you want to talk to us, we're still talking about Arizona Cardinals preseason games, about roster cuts, looking forward to the regular season. You can give us a call at 646-478-3787. We'll be on the air probably another about a half hour. And we're going to move on right now. We're going to talk about probably the guy, at least on our site, on revengeofthebirds.com, the most polarizing player currently. No, it's not Levi Brown. No, it's not Kevin Cobb, as it has been before, and John Skelton. It happens to be running back Ryan Williams, second-round pick from 2011, a guy that if you're around him and have seen him on the field, you get it. This guy has something about him that just makes you want to root for him. When he went down with his preseason injury, his patella tendon tear, he already had it's something that was commented, the way his teammates reacted to him as a rookie just told you what type of person, perhaps player, that he was. last year he came back, he admitted he was running a little bit scared, which is interesting after the fact. He said he was ready. You heard him talk ready all through the preseason in 2012. He said it the entire time that he was ready. Then he had issues. He did not run well. And then he had the shoulder injury that ended his season. This offseason, he says it's a blessing in disguise. He goes through the entire offseason workout time and offseason workouts, OTAs, mini camp. He's doing great. He had a great offseason. Training camp hits, and there's soreness in the knee. And at the most inopportune time, he misses 2 weeks. He misses over 2 weeks of practice, and he misses the first two preseason games. And now he's battling maybe for a roster spot. Many people think that he's gone. There are a couple of readers who are adamant that the guy is a bust. It'll be interesting to see what happens. He gets two carries on Saturday. Two carries, 5 yards each. They were two carries for 5 yards each, 10 yards total. There was a reception for 6 yards. And I caught this. That was a great sequence for Williams. Granted, he was running with the third team guys, but he made on that reception, it was a great play. He was in pass protection. He knocked the linebacker on his butt and then found his way into the open field to make a reception. It was a great sequence. He's going to get – there's the rumor that he's being shopped around. He's set to get a lot of the majority of the carries Thursday night in the final preseason game. But the question is, keep him, cut him, or trade him? Ben, what do you say?
Well, I'm going to say keep him for now. If you look at it, I guess, analytically, I mean, he's still on his rookie deal, so he's pretty cheap. He's well-liked by his teammates. They're, you know, you don't have the character concerns, so there are really no problems there. It's just whether you have the roster space to afford to hold on to a guy that, to this point in his career, has pretty much been all potential. I don't think he played really that much his senior year at Virginia Tech. He had injuries there, so he's barely played in 3 years, I think, which is kind of ridiculous in the NFL. Not many players can hang around that long and without producing much. I just think if you're happy with what you have with Alphonso Smith and Stephon Taylor and Andre Ellington, then you can probably afford to trade him, because whoever's behind Mendenhall isn't going to play that much anyway, and you've gotten to see Smith and Taylor. You've gotten to see everybody play except for Williams. So by this point, the coaches should have a pretty good idea of what they have in those guys, and if they're comfortable with them as the backups, then they can afford to trade Williams. If maybe they're not sure, or if they were really impressed by him in camp, then keep him around. I think they should probably keep him around, because he could be pretty good still if he hasn't lost his speed. You know, if he can bounce back one more time, at least hold on to him until the trade deadline, and maybe ease him into the lineup a little bit. Maybe increase his workload as the season goes on, and see if you can feature him a little bit, and maybe get some people interested in a potential trade there as the season goes on.
What do you say, Seth? Keep him, cut him, trade him?
Well, I'd love to trade him, but I really don't see anybody that's willing to give up even a seventh-round pick. I mean, maybe you could get a seventh-round pick for him, but at this point, most teams are going to be like, well, you're not going to keep five running backs on the roster. If they do, that'll be odd. So, you know, we'll just wait till you release him. But my whole thing with Ryan Williams is simple. You have a guy in Rashard Mendenhall right now who is injury prone, has been injury prone, whether it be this year, last year, or, you know, just fluke injuries throughout the past. And I really don't see having a guy that is just a running back on the roster that doesn't contribute to teams being on the roster in a situation where you don't want to ask him to have carries. I mean, Jess, you might have the information. I don't have it in front of me, but I can't remember the last time the Cardinals dressed five running backs on game day. They typically dressed three, and I think last year we saw them dress four a couple of times when Beanie was still healthy, well, sort of healthy. But to dress five running backs on game day is really not heard of. And then, you know, that means that you're going to have somebody like Andre Ellington or Alphonso Smith inactive, and you're then just, you know, a Rashard Mendenhall injury away from, you know, Ryan Williams maybe getting the bulk of the carries, and that's just not something that I'm super excited about or comfortable with, for that matter. So at this point, I think it's just time to cut ties and let him go elsewhere, see if he can get healthy and make an impact elsewhere. Sometimes a change of scenery, even when it's not because somebody's played bad or anything like that, but sometimes a change is just best for everybody involved, and I think that's kind of what this is.
So here's something, actually. I've had a series of tweets come in recently, and this is actually a question. I'm going to throw that back out to you guys. Ryan Lindley may or may not have a spot. Bruce Arians might go with two quarterbacks. He's done it before. He's been on lots of teams that go that route. Yeah, Palmer and Stanton. Do you keep Ryan Lindley? He's not practice squad eligible because he was active too many games last season, so he can't stash him there. If it comes down to Ryan Lindley or Ryan Williams for the 53rd spot on the roster, do you go with Williams or Lindley? Do you go with the third quarterback or the fifth running back? Ben, which way do you go?
Oh, man, that's so tough. is there another option?
This is a tweet that actually came in from Sean. He says go with Williams just in case Williams gets it finally. Another one comes in, says love Williams, but if that's what it comes down to, one or the other, I keep Lindley. It hurts to say that. And then Nick Kent Hodder over across the pond over there in New Zealand, he says only downside, we can't stash Lindley on the practice squad. And then someone else responds, Sean responds, I don't see that as a downside, the fact that we can't keep Lindley on the practice squad. So you go Lindley or Williams?
I will probably say that I would probably keep Williams. I think for the third QB, I don't see Lindley developing into a starter ever, so I don't really know how much of a purpose we even have in keeping him, you know, aside from having a backup. And at that point, you can get a guy, I think, that will be okay and put him on the practice squad. I believe, is it Denver is supposed to be cutting Zach Dysart? So maybe we could pick him up, something like that, and just put him on the practice squad. Or, well, we probably couldn't steal Dysart and put him on the practice squad. But he'd have to actually be signed to the active roster, I think. But you can look for a guy like that. And like the tweet from Sean said, if Williams does get it, you know, maybe this is the last bump in the road for him. And he's just, you know, a week or two away from having a solid season for the team. Then I just hate the idea of dumping him and then having him finally turn it around.
Seth, what would you do if it's down to Ryan Williams and Ryan Lindley?
I've said all along I want this team to have three quarterbacks on the roster. Carson Palmer is, you know, every player's one hit away, but Carson Palmer has had injury issues the last, I think, four seasons. And Drew Stanton has never made it healthy through a season in which he's played a game. So you have two quarterbacks with a pretty laundry list of injury history. I just don't want to have to see Patrick Peterson pull double duty for an entire half one game if both quarterbacks happen to go down in one game. And, you know, I thought I read somewhere that Patrick Peterson's the emergency quarterback in that case. So I think you have to keep Lindley just because of the medical history of Palmer and Stanton for the time being.
Even if they kept Lindley, though, they wouldn't necessarily be dressing him. So, I mean, I think for any third QB, he's probably going to be inactive, so you're going to be looking at Peterson at QB if they both go down anyway, wouldn't you think?
That would be the case, but we're talking the next week. That would be more like the next week. My take, you know, I'm going to tell you this. I love Ryan Williams. Having watched him in person, I've had interaction with him as a media member. There's something special about that guy, but you know what's going to happen, and unfortunately, is he is just yet another running back, highly drafted running back, that is going to go somewhere else and be pretty good. Based on the running backs we have, I don't see how you can keep him. Seth's already brought up the point. If you're going to have the fifth running back on your roster, the one thing he has to be able to do is to contribute on special teams. And we've already seen Alphonso Smith, as of right now, has bumped himself up to number two. He's number two right now. And so he's already a guy that plays special teams. So you've got Mendenhall, you've got Smith, you've got Stephon Taylor and you've got Andre Ellington. Yes, you can make the argument a fifth running back might not be bad because of the fact that Mendenhall is injury prone. And so you have a guy who can step in and be ideally the primary back. But I think there's someone somewhere that will take Ryan Williams off your hands if he has a good showing on Thursday. And we won't get much for him. It might be something like the A.J. Jefferson trade where it was basically a swapping of picks where we'll send you Williams and our seventh-round pick, and you give us your sixth, something like that. But even then, I think it's worth doing. Keep him? I would love to keep him. I don't think there's room on the roster for him. And I think he will be successful somewhere else. He'll get it. And we'll look at him, but, well, add that to the Thomas Jones and the Garrison Hurst of the history of the Cardinals that are running back. I'm getting a lot of Lindley saying he's not practice squad eligible. He's useless. I'm going to go with what Darren Urban said today. I actually agree with this on one of his blog posts. Is you could go with two quarterbacks. However, even though he's not practice squad eligible, I like having a third quarterback on the roster because if you need a third quarterback, you're going to have to bring in a guy who has had to catch up, who has to catch up the whole entire time. And the third guy you have, the third quarterback you have on your roster isn't necessarily a guy you're developed to be a starter. Arians himself compared Lindley to Kelly Holcomb. I know, Kelly Holcomb. He had a below average NBA NFL career when it came to being a quarterback. He started some games. He didn't do so hot. But he was there on the roster for a while. And the one thing about Ryan Williams that you need to have as a third quarterback, he's good on the practice field and he's great in the classroom. Last year's coaching staff, this year's coaching staff have been very impressed with how he's handled himself in the classroom and when he's given new things in the offense. And so that's what kind of things you have to look at. You never want the third quarterback to start. Pretty much your season shot if you have your number three guy starting, whether it's Lindley or whether it's a guy that you picked up off the street in the name of Tim Hasselbeck or Tim Rattay like we had before. That's not going to matter. I would go with the third quarterback over the fifth running back if that was the choice that I had to make. Again, you're listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is your host, Jess Root. We've got Seth and Ben on the line with us tonight. If you want to give your take on Arizona Cardinals preseason and the upcoming regular season, give us a call at 646-478-3787. We're getting ready to talk final cuts. So we've talked a little bit about Ryan Lindley, Ryan Williams, if it came down to number 53. Another debate that's been going on our website on revengeofthebirds.com. Great. I'm going to plug this definitely. Definitely going to plug this site. Yes, I kind of run it, but it's a great Arizona Cardinals community. You're not going to find a better Arizona Cardinals community out there. But we're talking about undrafted rookie Tony Jefferson, who had a great game against Dallas. He had two interceptions, two tackles for a loss. He looked great out there. Do note there were injury things that were going on. The reason why he played so much, Jonathan Anamaya, he was out. Javier Arenas was out, and so Tyrann Mathieu got a lot of snaps as well, more at the corner position at nickel corner. And he was already upgraded to the starting spot because Rashad Johnson was out either also. So against San Diego, you have Anamaya back, you have Rashad Johnson back. And so Tony Jefferson gets pushed back further back, and he got only a handful of snaps. There is the growing sentiment that you have to find a spot for Tony Jefferson on the roster. And I personally have nothing against Jefferson. I'm speaking of how the roster tends to go. Number four, safety. If you're going to get, would you keep Tony Jefferson or Jonathan Anamaya on your roster if you came down to those two, or would you keep Jefferson as a fifth safety? I personally don't see a fifth safety being kept. And if you're safety number four on a team, the one thing you have to be able to do is play on special teams because a fourth safety doesn't see the playing field on defense. And if we talk about Arizona Cardinals history, our fourth safety last year, James Sanders, played special teams. Before that, Hamza Abdullah, Sean Considine. They were with Considine. He ended up being number four and then number five. It was during Kerry Rhodes' injury and then recovery. Rashad Johnson and Hamza Abdullah. Those are the players who are the number four safety. They don't see the playing field defensively, and so they have to play special teams. Tony Jefferson thus far has not shown to be any sort of impact player in special teams, and Jonathan Amaya has made a name in the league for being a great special teams player. That said, do I think Tony Jefferson is probably the better safety? I definitely think so. So Tony Jefferson, I would like to keep him. I think he'll be able to. I don't think he'll make the team. That's my honest opinion. I don't think he'll make the final squad, but I think he will be a perfect practice squad player. I don't think he's going to be that sought after by other teams. He had two interceptions and two tackles for a loss against bench players, and he wasn't drafted. So I don't see how he's going to be a hot commodity coming out of camp if he gets cut. There's a lot of other guys who are going to get before him. So I'm going to see him stash him on the practice squad, and if one of the safeties ahead of him gets injured, say Rashad Johnson or Jeremiah Bell or Tyrann Mathieu gets injured, you can bring him up, and he can be a guy that gets rotational time defensively, and Amaya still plays special teams. Now I'm going to flip it to you guys. Seth, do you think Tony Jefferson should be on the roster, and do you think he will be on the roster?
One of the things I was really confused with last game was the fact that Jefferson didn't really play, and I don't know. I've said before, I'm not really a big fan of our safeties and our safety depth in general, outside of Mathieu. And I think his best position isn't even safety. So I thought Jefferson, he was the guy I had rated in the fourth round coming out. I thought he could have been a guy that made plays and was on this team. And maybe it's a ploy to hide him, maybe get him on the practice squad or something. I don't see him getting through to the practice squad, but it was something that I expected him to make this team. I thought after the Dallas game that we were going to see more of him, and it just seems like it went in the opposite direction. And I'm kind of with you, Jess. For whatever reason, I don't see him making this team. I don't see it happening, and that's unfortunate because I thought he was a guy that wasn't only going to make this team. I thought he was going to be able to make an impact.
Interesting. And I've always said it, this is a discussion that was online, is it's not, for me, it's not a case of, is it going to be Jefferson or Jonathan Amaya? Tony Jefferson, to make the team, has to beat out Tyrann Mathieu, the number three safety, because of the fact the number three safety can get playing time. Number four safety's not going to. So he's got to be better than the guy that gets playing time on the defensive side of the field. Ben, what's your take? Do you think that Jefferson should make the team? And do you think he will make the team? And if not, is you see him returning as a practice squad player?
I'll be really disappointed if he doesn't make the team. Like Seth was saying, I don't really like the safety depth either. I know technically on the depth chart he's behind Curtis Taylor, but Taylor has just been awful for us. So, I mean, I don't think it's any question that Taylor's going to make it either, though, of course. So one of the questions, I guess, that I have with this is what exactly are we calling Mathieu right now? Because, I mean, he just started, what, one or two games as a nickel corner? I mean, he's not going to be playing safety if he's our starting nickel corner. So does Tony Jefferson really have to beat out Mathieu? I don't know.
He is the number three safety, and he's their primary nickel corner. I think they really like what he brings to the playing field. And I think what it came down to, because he's been playing corner. He was playing before. He was number three safety. He was backup nickel corner. And he was number one dime corner. Now, we haven't seen any dime from the Cardinals yet. But I think it was a case that he beat out both Javier Arenas and Antoine Kayson, who was coming in as the third corner. But he still is the primary backup. He still is the primary backup for both for the safety positions, and so they really like what he does. And so I think he's both positions, and he's going to get moved around. So if he's in a safety position, if he ends up whether because of injury or because he passes either Bell or Johnson up, and he ends up being a base safety in nickel packages, I can totally see him being shifted over to nickel corner and in the inside corner, and then bring in another safety off the bench for that. That I see that role as, and he's very versatile. He doesn't fit kind of either role exclusively.
That's fair. Yeah, I like the versatility that Matthew gives us. Gives us, like, within the scheme, it gives us a lot of different things that we can do, which is definitely nice. So I just think with the way that the starters have played, I mean, I'm not even going to – even if you take out Rashad Johnson's ridiculous pitch play, I mean, I don't know. Bell hasn't been that great either. I think it would be a mistake to cut Jefferson because he's shown that he can play on defense. If you watched him in Oklahoma, I know obviously it's college, it's a different game, but, I mean, the things that he did against Dallas were pretty much what he did, you know, every week at Oklahoma, and teams know about that. It's going to be really tough, I think, to fit him through to the practice squad when you have other teams around the league that don't really have their starter set in stone or that could use a good third safety that could come in on the field and actually play for them. I think it'll be tough to sneak Jefferson through to the practice squad. I think it'd be a mistake to cut him personally. If he plays well in this last game, I think they will find a way to keep him, irregardless of everything else.
Well, great. So we've got, I don't think he'll make the team. We've got that. We've got roster. We got final roster cuts. We got the preseason game Thursday, the preseason finale, where we're going to see a lot of Ryan Lindley and a lot of Ryan Williams and a whole bunch of players that won't be playing in a few days. They're going to have to make the final 22 cuts down to the final 53. Any surprises? Now, this is a question I didn't give you guys beforehand, but at this point, do you see there being any surprise cuts on the Cardinals? Let's kick it to you, Ben.
I don't know if I see any surprise cuts. I have been surprised by some of the guys that I think will make the squad. Ronald Talley has really stepped up. I think even with his little penalty in the last game, he's done a really good job. He jumped over David Carter on the depth chart. I think he was actually the fourth defensive lineman in the game for us. So there's no question that he's moved up, and I think he could definitely make it. As far as cuts, I mean, you look at the tight ends, there could be a surprise there because I'm sure that's a position they're still going to be looking at, but would anyone really be surprised by anyone that was cut from that group? I don't know.
I wouldn't. Seth, any kind of unexpected cuts you think might be happening?
You know, you look at the roster, and I think it's pretty top-heavy talent-wise. I don't think there's a whole lot of depth right now. The one guy that could surprise getting cut, at least to me, would be Chilo Rochal. But I just think with the injury to Cooper, and I don't see how you can cut him at this point just because there's so many other – you don't really have many other options. That could be the one surprise cut. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen, though. But like Ben said, it's pretty easy to tell who's going to make the team at this point. I don't see anybody surprising getting on over maybe, you know, a guy like Kaysan or somebody like that getting cut. So,
and I'm going to say that Rashal, because I think Rashal's going to see his way out of the roster, because you're going to look at the backups and the number. It depends on the number of the linemen they keep. If Cooper ends up on the IR or designated to return, so you have to have another guy on the roster. Mike Gibson, who's the backup center, also can play guard. And so he's the veteran guy that I think they're going to keep. So you're going to keep Potter. You're going to keep Massey. And I think you're going to have probably nine. I think they're going to do nine linemen. So you're going to have Gibson at center, and then I think it's going to be Watford. Even though we really haven't seen much of him, he's the young guy that they're going to keep around. Kalamete, I think, is out of a job unless he is practice squad eligible. He wasn't active enough. I'm almost 100% sure. I have to go back and check, but I'm almost 100% sure that he's practice squad eligible if the team still wants him around. But I'm going to say that Watford's going to make the team over Rashal. Anything else you guys want to talk about, share, comments before we close up shop for the night?
I just want to make one more comment on the game overall. I think the other thing that there's a big concern about, Jess, you and I had had this conversation before, is the lack of pass rush still being generated. I know it's still preseason and things like that, but the Cardinals still cannot win one-on-one getting to the passer, and that's a concern, because I think with the coverage issues we've seen in the secondary and the coverage issues we've seen Minter have, Brinkley have, and Carlos Dansby looked really slow. I know it was his first game back, but he looked really, really slow coming back last game. I think you can't really bring pressure from multiple angles like Ray Horton did, because it's gonna burn you, sort of like Horton's defense did. And, you know, that's just a concern that I've had all along, and I just it hasn't really been quelled yet during the preseason. I haven't seen anything to show me anything different at this point.
Final thoughts, Ben?
Aside from I was going to respond to that. I've basically just been watching the defensive line, and I've gone back and rewatched the games, and I think you're pretty much right. Aside from Calais Campbell, there's nobody winning consistently on the defensive line. I think one thing that would really help, and this may be a shock to some people, but it definitely won't be to everybody, I think Dockett needs to start losing snaps. Easton and Shaughnessy have both done a pretty good job as defensive ends, you know, lining up their hand in the dirt, and I think either one of those guys could probably take snaps away from Dockett and have more of an impact in pass rushing situations.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Ben. That's something that Jess and I hit on the last podcast, is the off season of talk he had.
Yeah, it's been a disappointment, I think, for sure.
Well, thank you two for joining us tonight, and we're going to go ahead and close up shop. We've got two nights away from our final preseason game. We're a week and a half away from our regular season debut, when the Arizona Cardinals travel to St. Louis to kick off the season against the Rams. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Revenge of the Birds. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio. Of course, you can find us at revengeofthebirds.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great night. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.